Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. This is the first episode in our new series about the body. In this series we want to cover yoga and the body and thinking in the body, ancient dualism, Cartesian dualism and philosophical responses to them, death and mortality, sickness, sex and reproduction, and the body as a site of struggle, race, class, and gender. So it's quite a lot of things that we want to ramble on about there.
And always in the hope of being helpful to people out there.
Yeah. this first episode is about yoga and the body. And we recorded this a few years ago now, originally went on to YouTube. We decided not to re-record it because it's there's lots of juicy fun stuff in there. But we were a lot more slack in our recording practices than we are now. So it's a bit of a terrible recording. So apologies in advance that we passed some guy with a strimmer and there's some works and there's quite a lot of cars. So it's a bit noisy. So sorry about that.
But the
content is great.
It's stimulating. And I think it kind of maps out just many of the areas that we want to think and talk about are already signalled in
that
consideration,
episode,
that quite specialised consideration. We do go into the Hatha Yoga Pradipika there for people who are interested in that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Its relationship to Patanjali, for instance. So,
and it's also quite interesting because it's what we were thinking about a couple of years ago. So it's a bit of a historical document.
Yes.
As well.
Anyway, enjoy, and here it is.
So here I am with PT Yates on this wonderful spring day. Very sunny, the birds are singing, and we're walking along the Wolverhampton Canals, and we decided today that we would talk about yoga and the body. So, what you were mentioning before, there was a certain springing off point to this.
Yeah, well, there are numerous, really. It's a vast topic, as usual.
Yeah, as usual. It's
basically bringing together two terms and you end up with a vast topic, yoga and the body. Anything with yoga in it, in the title, is going to be vast.
Yeah.
But actually thinking about it, anything with body in it is also going to be vast.
Yeah.
In the yoga texts and in yoga culture and in modern yoga culture also, There's a number of viewpoints about the nature and significance of the human body, which are held to, and which inform practice. Practice always takes its shape from some prior commitments, some prior philosophical commitments. Whether we like that or not, I know yogis pretend to be above all that stuff, but actually, there's always an underpinning conceptual system that justifies and explains particular practices. And in the broad yoga culture, you can see a number of these conceptual systems and a number of different attitudes to the human body. A common attitude in yoga culture and in spiritual culture in general is one of contempt for the body. The body is merely a vehicle for this far superior entity of the soul, or perhaps the mind. Mm-hmm. And you hear talk along the lines that the body is just merely the vehicle for this wonderful soul, or the container, and any attention paid to the body is simply hygienic. It's simply a matter of looking after the vehicle or looking after the vessel. And you'll hear this kind of talk emanating from pretty well all cultures that have got some spiritual practices.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't very far away from condemnation of the body. And again, the world's spiritual cultures at large have often condemned the body quite loudly It's been called the bag of shit. Not only merely the vehicle, but a bag of shit. And yes, contempt for the body is absolutely. It's been rife throughout human history, and usually when you get contempt for the body, you also going along with that get practices of punishing the body.
Yeah.
The body is the vehicle of sin, i.e., sex. You know. And therefore, it has to be punished, and so you get the whole phenomenon of asceticism, which is guilt-driven punishment.
Yeah.
Of the body, because the body is earthy.
Yeah.
And fallen.
Yeah.
And this value system, which places the body beneath something higher, either mind or soul or spirit. It's all of that stuff's based on a vertical metaphor, which says that the feet are dirty and unclean, but the head is noble. And as you go up the body, it gets more refined, more noble. And that kind of vertical value system tells you where you should place your contempt in life, you know. So I kind of personally don't buy into any of that stuff, because I think that it comes out of human fear of suffering and the potentiality that life has just to make us hurt. Psychologically and physically, but really it's the body that we blame for our openness and vulnerability to suffering. We blame the body. We cut our finger, we get a disease, we break something, something's amputated, you know, all this is suffering, and of course we die inevitably.
Yeah.
You know, so the body is the thing to which all this suffering happens, and the contempt has arisen out of that, out of fear really of those facts. And so people have always tried to kind of overcome the body, or kill the body and liberate the soul. And remember the Buddhist conception of enlightenment, which they inherited from their Brahmanical contemporaries. The Buddhist view of life is it's something to be escaped from. When you're enlightened, you can step off the wheel of rebirth. You can step off it, and that's thought to be a good, because life's so fucking painful. Plus they believe that you come back again and again and again and again and again. So when you try and imagine that and combine that with feelings of vulnerability and suffering and pain and sickness, you can see why the Buddhist imagination sees release from all that as the good. And if you're enlightened, you're the one who can get off the wheel. You know. So life is an evil thing to be escaped from. And mainly because of the body. It's the body that's fallen.
Yeah.
In Christianity, the same. You know, it's Eve. It was the fig leaves, sexual intercourse, serpents, creatures of the earth, sexuality,
apples.
Women underneath men, you know, in the hierarchy of value. And the whole kind of caboodle blames the body for original sin, you know, and for which we are punished generation upon generation. Stupid idea, but it's held sway for 2,000 years over a big part of the world. So I'm going on about it at length, you know.
Yeah.
And that all that asceticism, all that condemnation of the body, arises basically out of a dualism, out of a mind-body dualism or a soul-body dualism. And I'll just say in here, without going into the reasons why, too much, that for myself it makes no sense. You can kind of pick away at these ideas to see if they've got any substance, and they haven't. Even though they've reigned for thousands of years, they don't really have anything to back them up. They're just fantasies, basically. You know, they're just speculative fantasies. For myself, my speculative fantasy is that the human being is one thing. In fact, the world is one thing, the universe is one thing.
Mm.
You know, and that the mind-body dualism isn't real, and it's a dualism that exists for language purposes and for purposes of communication. It so happens that the human being is one thing, But in order to talk, we need several distinct vocabularies. So we have a vocabulary for body talk, and we have a vocabulary for mind talk. But it's all talk produced by the single entity, which is the human being. So all of my thought around yoga and meditation and philosophy in general is, takes it at the starting point that the human being is one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you take a view like that, you don't have the basis for setting up condemnation of the body. You know, condemnation of the body requires as its basis a vertical axis of value in which the earth is low, and of course that includes anything material like the body, and the sky is high. The more immaterial something is, the more valuable it is. Yeah. So the most valuable thing is spirit. Imagine there's something with no mass, a matterless thing. That's why angels are diaphanous.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is totally mixed up and enmeshed with this body hatred that provides spiritual culture. Now, within the yoga culture, there is a little kind of corner. It's not a tiny corner, but it's a small corner where some thoughts similar to mine seem to have unfolded, and you can find traces of this stuff thousands of years back, you know. And there's a notion that the spiritual thing to do actually is to celebrate the body, because it's equal. It's not lower than in value something else. It's equal in value to everything else, and it's beautiful. But it's a part of the great and astonishing universe. And that, well, I suppose that's Tantra basically, isn't it? You know, Tantra realised that a lot of what people were doing in their quest for samadhi, enlightenment, yoga being state, beatitude, there was a realisation that a lot of those practices were basically against life. There was like life hatred at the bottom of it. Hence you had a very renunciant style of spirituality with a lot of denial of the body, a lot of slander of sexual expression and any kind of appetite at all. You know, it was thought if you could manage without having sex, you were some kind of superior being.
Yeah.
If you could manage on very little food, you were some kind of superior being.
Yeah.
But Tantra's saying, actually, no, all of it. All of it. You know, all phenomena are pure. All phenomena are pure. Tantra is saying that. And it is arising out of that comes something like the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which again suddenly says, well, the body's cool, you know. The body's actually cool.
Yeah.
Let's work through the body, because this is the most immediate thing. And we don't have to condemn it. That's a silly thing that people have been doing for ages. Because they kind of got they got mixed up about the nature of things. The body's cool. Hatha Yoga Pradipika. And it's not a great luminous piece of analysis like the Yoga Sutra, Hatha Yoga Pradipika. It's a bit of a down home contradictory scrawling in some ways. But this thing that it does, it just says, come on guys, the body, stop being snotty about the body.
Yeah.
And it gives 14 yoga postures, most of which are sitting postures. And a number of pranayamas, quite a lot of pranayamas. Nothing explicated or instructed in any great detail. There's a whole, of course, there's four chapters, and the last chapter is actually on samadhi. So it's all for meditation, all of it. And you know, it's saying meditation, start with the body, maybe finish with the body as well, you know. Not in the sense of finish with the body, kill the body, but the body can take you all the way, because all phenomena are pure. And therefore, any phenomenon, a human body, a link of shit, a bullet, a jewel. All of these things are opportunities. Any fluctuation in the field of your awareness is an opportunity.
Yeah.
To do hatha yoga, because hatha yoga is the yoga of the body. It's the yoga that says, actually, the body's cool. But there are still people out there condemning the body and saying, all you Western yogis are a pile of shit because all you do is worry about your postures. Why don't you just fucking meditate until your ears bleed? Otherwise, we're not going to fucking believe in you, you know. The body is merely the vehicle. Oh, actually, the body, let's get rid of the body. We have to disidentify from the body. The body's not us. The body's not, you know, and all of this stuff is the cry of life hatred based on fear.
Yeah.
All of it. Tantra says that, and the Hatha Yoga Pradipika grew out of that protest against life hatred. And, but it's a weird mixture, because it says things like, store your semen, don't have any sex.
Yeah.
Brahmacharya is by that time interpreted as a kind of celibacy.
Oh.
It's saying all that, and then you turn the page, and the next chapter it's saying, but if you've really got this practice together, and you really understand this, it's actually okay to shag women, and if you're a woman, it's okay to shag men.
Yeah.
In fact, you can have a lot of fun doing that, because what you can do is, once you've learnt this mudra, Vajrayana mudra, whatever it is, you'll be able to suck your sperm back into your body, out of the woman's vagina.
Woohoo!
And not only that, if you're really lucky, you'll get some of her menstrual blood or some of her sexual secretions. And they're really, really powerful drugs, man. Suck it up into your bladder and you'll trip out. So they invent this whole entire kind of sex game, which kind of says that we'll become immortal or we'll get liberated.
Yeah.
If we have the sensitivity to get into every nervous twitch during sexual activity.
So do women get to suck up anything?
They do, actually. He says it works the same for women if they can suck it all up into them.
Okay. So there's like this tug of war between...
There could be. Yeah. I mean, you could have a treaty, I suppose. You could say, it's my turn this week.
It's my turn to do the sucking today.
Yeah, and I think that's all right, you know. People can work those kind of things out amongst themselves in relationships.
Sure. Consenting, I mean, adults and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, that's where all that goes. It swings back into the body to the extent that it's got you sucking stuff up the pipe of your dick, you know. And believing some kind of interesting ideas about bodily secretions.
Yeah.
But it's great, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the sound of somebody opening a lock behind us.
Yeah.
That clicking. Just to prove we really are on the canal.
So Hatha Yoga Pradipika, 15th century. Fascinating, short. Has some ideas that are sort of quite alien to those current in most of the world about sex. Even though there's people that follow this stuff, of course there is. It's not Hatha Yoga as we know it now. It's not 21st century Hatha Yoga. It's like there are only 14 or 15 postures, most of which are sitting postures.
Any idea why most of them are sitting?
Because it's what he's doing in some ways. He says Hatha Yoga is for, unless it serves Raja Yoga, in other words, Patanjali's Yoga of meditative insight. It's useless. Hatha Yoga is useless unless it serves Raja Yoga.
Yeah.
Hatha Yoga is for meditation. So he's doing this very kind of simple and necessary thing of training people to be able to sit still for a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and here are some things that which help. Like a forward bend with your feet out, perhaps after or before, or a peacock and stuff. Uh-huh. And also he claims that there are health benefits for these things. He started that, I think. I don't know, I suppose if you go back into the medical, Vedic medical texts, you might find that there are some specific things. I don't know enough about that. But it gives these medicinal benefits. Yeah. You can do peacock stand. It destroys all disease. This wonderful posture destroys all disease.
Right.
You know, It's got all this stuff. Yeah. If you sit like this and you focus your eyes on the tip of your nose, you'll be enlightened in 6 years.
A lot of carrot dangling in that then.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's sort of very raw. It's raw, you know. But the beauty is in the reinstatement of the body into spiritual practice as a primary rather than the secondary or tertiary matter. The body suddenly is primary. And I think that's what I want to work with. Concrete lived experience. What is it, first and foremost? Embodied.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sensual.
Yeah.
Well, what are the senses? Like your eyes, balls of jelly and you set in your head. Your ears, flaps of skin, meat, bits of meat, stitched to the side of your head. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The senses are flesh. Okay, you're a tantric wally, you celebrate the senses. So why do you celebrate the senses? Well, because it's very pleasurable. It gives aesthetic experience. And why is that good? Because it induces you to meditate. You cannot fail to naturally meditate if you have sensitive sensory experience. You see something beautiful, it throws you into meditation. You see something sublime, it throws you into meditation. You see something extremely subtle, it throws you into meditation. But none of that works if you're not noticing anything.
Yeah.
And if you are busy condemning the body,
and
condemning the eyes, and condemning the ears, and condemning the taste buds, and desensitising yourself systematically because you think the body's a bag of shit and you have to ascend to a realm of pure spirit, you really are fucked in that scenario, you know. You desensitise yourself, and a lot of spirituality consists in desensitising yourself, and very often in a very fleshy kind of way.
Yeah, I do find that so strange.
It's a pattern of human behaviour that's dominated the planet.
Yeah.
For most of human history, as Nietzsche said, if an alien come down in a flying saucer to the earth, he would say, oh my god, what an ascetic star. He calls the earth the ascetic star.
Yeah.
Because it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And Tantra is a rebellion, and still is, in the sense of you say, well, no, fuck no life. Life, man. Life's the religion. Life! And the body, of course, it's the first thing. The body. The body is the instrument of our experiment, but it's also the subject of our experiment, because the body is the home of all experience.
Yeah.
And as yogis,
I like that term. The body is the home of all experience.
Yeah, and as yogis, we're very, very interested in experience above and beyond pretty well everything else. We vowed to ourselves to dive into the ocean of human experience, to understand it, to enjoy it, to be baffled by it, but most of all to live it. And that, you know, that's the commitment of it. So we have to honour the body. We have to honour the body. So does that mean we should behave in any particular respect to our bodies? The fact that suddenly the body is this exalted thing. Actually, I'd say yes. You know, I'd say, well, look after it. Just look after it. The needless suffering is a bit daft, and if you don't look after it, it will throw more suffering at you than you'd perhaps otherwise encounter. So look after it. I would say it comes to that, you know, appreciate it. But it's more than just a vehicle, you know.
Yeah.
It's a glory. So, you know, and enjoy, of course, because in pleasure, enjoy, whether, particularly when it's enjoy with another, is one of those places in life where the yoga being state, pokes its head out, big style. So if your body is sensitive, because you've looked after it and you've relaxed it, and you've become relaxed as a being, as a character, in order to encounter life as it unfolds with as much openness as you can muster. In that scenario, you've got you've actually got your yoga on the plate, right in front of you.
Yeah.
Without any kind of tight-arsed regimental shit that goes down under the name of yoga. You know, it's not necessary. Not only is it not necessary, if it's taken too far.
Yeah.
It's again desensitizing.
Yeah.
Because all the techniques that we've got in yoga, the meditations, the posture work, the breath work, etc. They're all capable of inflicting harm, as well as helping you to do this thing. You know, they can desensitize just as easily as they can sensitize. And I'm certainly wanting to say to people in my yoga teaching, don't desensitize, sensitize.
You were using this thing, driven to dance from the inside out.
Yeah, well, that comes.
That comes,
yeah. It comes. Since the whole thing is a going with and a being with and a letting go into, we inevitably become less and less busy inside the practice.
Yeah.
Because we're not wanting to create the noise and insensitivity of interfering and meddling all the time.
Yeah, it feels a lot nicer.
In the unfolding. That makes one aesthetically more sensitive and therefore open to pleasure, erotic pleasure, that exposes the yoga being state in its very intensity. So eventually, you get this thing of the yoga does you. You don't go and do your yoga. The yoga does you.
Yeah.
and using the body, enjoying the body as Hatha yoga prescribes in its tantric aspect, becomes a dance, but it's a spontaneous dance. It's a dance that comes from really, really right down inside you to the surface and makes your body move.
Yeah.
It's a spontaneous dance. It's not choreographed. It's not rehearsed. It just happens.
Yeah.
And that is the practice.
Yeah.
It just happens.
When you get to the point where the yoga does you, that's very nice. And very useful as well. When you're able to do that, you just learn such a lot.
Indeed.